This is Faith in Action, the program that looks at how people put their faith into action in their everyday lives. Faith in Action is a production of Catholic Radio Indy. Now here's today's program. This is Faith in Action on Catholic Radio. I'm Jim Ganley. Our co-host is Bridget Ayer.
Hi, good to be with you.
And likewise.
Jim, he's getting me all razzed up already. He always acts up over there. So,
well, we've got an interesting topic here that is one that nobody likes to think of, and yet most everybody listening will have to think of at some point.
Right. We are actually talking with Dr. Natalie Rodden. She is a palliative medicine physician and expert. She comes to us from St. Anthony North Health Campus in Westminster, Colorado. We're talking via phone. And she is actually going to be in town in the Indianapolis metro area at Our Lady of Mount Carmel coming up October 14th, a Sunday, to talk about ethics on the edges of life. So welcome to Faith in Action, Dr. Rodden.
Thank you. It's great to be here.
And first off, why don't you tell us what palliative care is, and then maybe talk a little bit about the work that you do out there in Denver.
Sure. So it's sort of a funny word, I think, palliative care. And it comes from the word pallium, which means cloak. And so when we think about palliative care, it's a subspecialty of medicine for people with serious or life-limiting medical conditions. So oftentimes I think about medical conditions that aren't curable.
Mm-hmm.
Sometimes they are, but oftentimes it's diseases that are going to hang around for a while. And so palliative care is meant to provide support or to cloak these people with support. And so it's neat because I think it's inherently connected to our faith because pallium, the cloak, is worn by the Pope.
Mm.
And so I oftentimes talk about that in when I speak because I'm thinking about it's a little fabric that goes around the shoulders. And when I think about lifting up patients who are going through a lot and their families, it's a subspecialty where we have doctors, nurses, social workers, chaplains, all there because we know that when you have a serious illness, it can affect you in many ways, physically, spiritually, emotionally, et cetera.
So how did you get into this? How did you decide that this was what you wanted to specialize in?
Well, I honestly wanted to become an oncologist since early on in medical school. And so the road to that in medical training is you do something called internal medicine first.
Mm-hmm.
And then when you finish with that, you subspecialize in, for example, oncology caring for cancer patients. And early on in my residency, I realized that oftentimes the needs of patient symptom control and addressing their quality of life and really getting into this the deep issues related to the suffering of their illnesses was not really being adequately addressed in the hospitals I worked. And as I spent more time, I realized that my heart was really going toward that. And I didn't really know how to fulfill that because there wasn't a palliative care training where I did my fellowship training in Utah. But the more I read and learned, I realized there was this field called palliative medicine, which is really a quite immature field out there. But I was able to, thankfully, get into a training program at the Mayo Clinic, and it's really been a beautiful fit for me. Oftentimes, I still do care for cancer patients, but my patient population is broader than that. And I tell people, you know, it was a shift because you go to medical school to fix people and to make them better. And most all my patients, I can't completely cure or fix all the way.
Mm-hmm.
And some people would say, oh, that is so depressing. But for me, and I think especially rooted in my faith, my challenge is to help creatively reduce suffering in whatever form that it comes and to help people live the best life possible. And that, for me, is immensely satisfying and a really beautiful way to care for people, I believe.
I agree. And I think I was just wondering, I'm kind of skipping ahead on my questions, but it kind of fits with what you're talking about. I'm curious if it seems like Catholics really approach death, dying, and suffering from a different perspective than maybe the secular world. Can you talk a little bit about that and how, you know, kind of we as Catholics look at this topic a little bit differently? And we're not just saying, let's just get rid of the suffering, let's just end someone's life. We find meaning in that.
Right, absolutely. And I think our world views suffering as this enemy.
Mm-hmm.
And they view death as this enemy. And I think in our culture, there's this we're ignoring, you know, death and trying to ward it off at all costs, when really it's an inevitable part of the human condition.
Mm-hmm.
And so we're so uncomfortable with suffering or with the idea of suffering that we want to avoid it at all costs.
Mm-hmm.
Even at the extent of reducing, not just reducing the suffering, but taking away the sufferer,
mm-hmm.
like in the setting of physician-assisted suicide or euthanasia, and so, you know, as Catholics, we value the sanctity of life, and we believe in loving each person and caring for them to the end of their natural life,
right.
here on earth, to a natural death. And so for us, as we have the model of Christ who suffered for all of us, suffering is not devoid of meaning. Suffering, even though our church teaches that we can treat suffering,
mm-hmm.
and we can manage symptoms to still have the best life and the best functioning we can, suffering itself is part of the human condition and is something that that we address and is meant to be still treated in part of the whole person and still supporting the whole person in their walk in their natural life. And so,
and if you're just joining us, I'm gonna cut you off there because people are,
yeah.
listening and they're thinking, who is this? I want to know who this is. So I'm going to reintroduce you. We're talking with Dr. Natalie Rodden. She's a palliative. Did I say that? Or palliative? Which,
yeah,
is
that's
it?
That's right.
Palliative.
Palliative.
Go ahead.
Palliative. Yep. Think of the pallium. Yep.
Okay. Palliative medicine physician. And we're talking about end of life issues. And I want to ask you, you did something pretty interesting, and I thought actually brilliant when I read your bio. You founded a student version of the Catholic Medical Association. I want you to talk about that and why you did that.
Sure. So when I started medical school, I had gone to Catholic education my whole life,
mm-hmm.
before that,
mm-hmm.
And I grew up in a Catholic family, but I was now in this secular environment with many colleagues who sort of, I don't want to use too strong of a word, but like the word attack came up. And it wasn't like my colleagues just didn't really understand my faith. And I realized early on that I don't know if I could really defend it that well. And also I realized that things that were being taught in the classroom were in opposition to what I had grown up learning and believing as Catholic. And so I really had to dig my heels in and say, you know, if I'm going to say I'm Catholic, it's not just going to be on Sundays.
Mm-hmm.
It's going to be every day of the week, and it's going to be as a Catholic physician. But what does that mean? And so I started looking around to get support, and I learned about the Catholic Medical Association, which is a beautiful organization of physicians trying to just embrace their faith in the science and practice of medicine and follow the magisterial teachings. And there's really good formation and mentorship in that organization. And I was blessed to go to a conference my second year of medical school on the theology of suffering, which I believe has truly impacted my career choices. But it was there that I saw hundreds of physicians that were like, on their knees before the Blessed Sacrament in adoration. And I realized, wow, this can be a both and. You know,
yeah.
I can be like and be this physician rooted in my faith. And so I met some other students there that were at their medical school struggling with the same issues that I was, you know, being taught about abortion or all these issues that were in opposition to our faith. And we after prayer and you know, thinking about how we can go forward, I was asked to help found an organization for students, and it's really been a gift to see how this has flourished over the years. So I started this around 2010, and now I'm not involved anymore, but it's really become this organization that is around the country. I think it's at 26 or 30 medical schools now. They
wow.
have student chapters of the Catholic Medical Association to help support these students. So they're not all reinventing the wheel, and so they're having great support and being rooted from the beginning.
Yeah.
And we have a boot camp now, we call it, for medical students and residents to do some ethics training in the summer between their school years, where they learn about beginning of life, end of life ethics. They learn about our church documents. They learn more about prayer and how that can be very formational in their work as a Catholic doctor.
Yeah, and you know what? We're going to take a quick break, and we will be back to talk with Dr. Natalie Rodden about end of life issues. So stay tuned for more Faith in Action.
Go out in the world. Go out in the world. Tell everyone the good, good news.
And that's what we're all about right here on Catholic Radio Indy, spreading the good news of the gospel of Jesus Christ. Hi, I'm Kent Blanford. Join me every Saturday and Sunday morning at 10 for Catholic Jukebox Indiana, an hour of contemporary music with a Catholic message. That's Catholic Jukebox Indiana, Saturday and Sunday at 10 a.m. right here on Catholic Radio Indy.
Wow, it really adds up. Remember that can of beans you bought at Kroger, and the loaf of bread, and the bag of apples, and the ice cream? Well, if you've registered your Kroger Plus card and chosen Catholic Radio Indy as your charity, we get a percentage of almost everything you buy. So far, in just a few months, we've gotten over $300. If you haven't registered your Kroger Plus card yet, it's really easy, and you only have to do it once. Go to CatholicRadioIndy.org and click on the Kroger logo to get started.
You're listening to Catholic Radio Indy. Please support the businesses that you hear as underwriters here on the station.
Protestants often think that the difference in the Greek words for Peter's name, Petros, and the rock, Petra, in Matthew 16:18, is evidence against Peter being the first pope. But does this objection deal the death blow that Protestants think it does? Nope, and here's why. First, even in the Greek of the New Testament, called Koine Greek, scholars recognize that there's no difference in meaning. In the IVP Bible Background Commentary, Craig Keener affirms that these two terms were cognate terms that were used interchangeably by this period. This view is supported by the fact that John tells us in John 1:42 that the Aramaic equivalent of Petros is Cephas, which means rock. So why the difference? Gender. Petros is masculine and Petra is feminine. It makes perfect sense that a feminine noun would not be used for a masculine name. I'm Carlo Broussard with the Ready Reason for Catholic Answers, Catholic.com.
Welcome back to Faith in Action. I'm Bridget Ayer, and I'm here with Dr. Natalie Rodden. She is a palliative medicine physician, and eventually I'll learn how to say that right. But we're talking about end-of-life issues, and I want to ask you, how do people start this conversation? It's not really a topic that people really want to talk about, death or end of life. How soon or when is, what's the context when people should start talking about this?
Well, honestly, and I acknowledge it is a difficult and not fun conversation, but it's something that is really good to have, and there's never an too early time, because God forbid a bad accident happened or some sort of trauma. This is just really good, a good conversation to have with your loved ones. And honestly, I tell families who I care for in the hospital, if you have this conversation with your kids, or you know, you share your preferences and your values with them, and making sure everyone's on the same page, doing that is a gift to them, because if they ever had to act in your behalf, or you couldn't speak for yourself, they would really know they would be honoring you, and they wouldn't have questions, and there wouldn't be as many doubts. And so although we can never prepare exactly for what's happening ahead of us, it's really nice to put some things in place, like advanced directives, or just to have good conversations with our loved ones.
So what Can you tell us what an advanced directive is? I know whenever, if you ever have surgery, you have to have one. And I'm, you know, you're like, what is this? What is it? And how do you come up with one that is in line with the teachings of the church?
Absolutely. So an advanced directive is basically information that shares sort of, if this happens, this is what I would want, or this isn't what's important to me. And so as Catholics, for many of us, having medical care that is consistent with the Catholic teaching and with our faith is very important. And so there's different documents that are out there that help guide Catholics in formulating these directives. I know for the state of Indiana, you all have a wonderful document, and it's called A Catholic Guide to Health Care Directives and the Indiana Catholic Health Care Directives. This includes things like a medical durable power of attorney, and that is someone who, in the case that you couldn't speak for yourself, maybe you had a stroke or you were undergoing surgery or something, or you were confused, this would be a person who would speak on your behalf. They would be your voice. And so it's really good to designate that person so there's no questions by the doctors and the medical team on who to get in touch with. There's another part of that called a living will, which is more talking about in different medical situations, what kind of cares you would or wouldn't want. Because honestly, in our Catholic faith, we aren't called to be something called vitalists, which means we're there to live life as long as possible, life at all costs, not do anything. We don't believe in that, yet we believe in honoring and the respect and the sanctity of life. And so it's difficult sometimes in thinking about what is right for me. Just because I can do this medical treatment doesn't mean I have to. Mm-hmm. And so thinking about your particular personal values and the risks and burdens and the benefits of different things in your particular situation is really important.
And I think, you know, maybe this is going to sound bad, but if someone's older, you know, let's say they're 95 and lived a good life, and, you know, you don't want to use maybe extraordinary means. Are you prolonging someone's life or are you prolonging their death? I don't know if that's the right wording, but you really have to discern and figure out, you know, it might be easier if someone's older to not do more extraordinary means, because we know as Catholics, there's an afterlife and we look forward to that. And, you know, let mom die or let dad die, let them go to heaven. We're not going to just keep them alive when they, you know what I'm saying?
Yeah,
versus if you're a young person and you're in an accident, you might be more inclined to try to use extraordinary means, thinking that maybe a cure will happen or that they have time. You know what I'm saying? So does age play a part in the decision making, I guess, is what I'm asking?
Well, you know, something I propose to a lot of patients is, you know, to ask, what is the meaningful benefit of this, you know, fill in the blank, surgery, chemotherapy, a test, different things that these could help me, or what is the meaningful benefit to my loved one? And in thinking about extraordinary or ordinary measures, we sort of get beyond that now, and we think about something called proportionate or disproportionate care.
Okay.
And so when something is proportionate, it means that the benefits outweigh the burdens for me. And so disproportionate would be the burdens outweigh the benefit.
Right.
And so then you think about someone who is older, there might be many more treatments that would be disproportionate because the expected benefit would not be outweighed by the risks, rather than a person who's much younger. If there's a really healthy, functional 95-year-old, there might be a lot less disproportionate things. So it really depends on the person.
Yeah.
Now, Doctor, one issue that has been in the news a lot lately that may fit into the type of care that you offer is opioid painkillers and opioid addiction. What are your thoughts on that? I mean, people that are in pain don't want to be in pain, and maybe the opioid painkillers serve that purpose, but nobody wants to become addicted. What are your thoughts on that?
Yeah, that's a great question and something very relevant today. In palliative care, my field, we view opioids a little bit differently than I did in my internal medicine training or before I went to fellowship. We know that in many very serious illnesses like cancer or bad lung disease, symptoms can be controlled best by this class of medications, cancer, pain, or really bad shortness of breath. And if we don't use these medications, we're not following the standard of care. Mm-hmm. Those are proven to be the best to let people be as functional as possible, to take away that edge and that shortness of breath, or to let people be able to do things like take a shower or walk to the mailbox in these disease situations. And so a lot of what I do actually is talk to these patients, you know, a new patient who has advanced cancer, and say, you know, you're not going to go rob a bank to get more money to get these drugs. You're not going to be turned into some sort of addict. I want you to try to trust me to let me give you these medications to try to see if they really help your pain, because I don't think that other medications will be as effective. I'm not here to get you hooked on things. I'm not here to just give you medications to sedate you. I'm here to give you the lowest dose that is necessary to help relieve your symptom to where you can live better.
Right. And so people probably just need to talk to their doctor and look at the pros versus the cons on something like that. And I know that is a really common thing that people are afraid. I think my daughter had her wisdom teeth out, and you know, I said, well, maybe we'll go with Tylenol. You know, we got whatever. I can't remember what it was, but you know, one of those narcotics, I think, for pain. And so we went with, you know, Tylenol, but you know, we're talking a wisdom tooth, we're not talking cancer. So I think you have to just make that discernment.
Yeah, it's a different approach that we take in thinking about people with serious life-limiting illnesses.
Right.
But it definitely is something I still take into consideration. You know, if someone's had a problem with addiction in the past, or if they've had issues with opioid medications, if they are living with someone who is an addict to drugs, you know, there's a lot of safety things I still am thinking about that all of this brings to light. But I do think that it is important that this population has access to medications that are most effective.
So where do people get started in having this conversation about the end-of-life issues? How do you start that? Hey, mom, or hey, you know, child, or whatever. How do you bring that up?
You know, there's a lot of different guides out there. There's one website that's helpful. It has some good guides on it called The Conversation Project. Mm-hmm. And it just has a lot of different prompts that you can do with your family members. You know, I think that something, you know, I could say to my loved ones would be, I really want to support you the best I can, you know, in sickness and in health. And how can I best understand what's important to you if things happened, and or, you know, talking about what's most important to you for good quality of life, or what do you most enjoy, you know, just talking about values, you know, just questions that start to prompt about values, and then that can kind of lead to, well, if it's most important to you to be home and independent, what does that mean in this situation? Or what if your health is different? And I think that can kind of help, you know, just serve as the springboard for further, deeper conversation.
So I want to ask you, what kind of aspects about your position have you found rewarding in working with people? I'm sure you've had so many just different experiences, and how your faith has really been an integral part of that. What kind of an impact has it had on you, and maybe even the family members that, and the patients that you work with in terms of your work?
Well, I think what I find really meaningful is being, having the opportunity to encounter patients in the midst of a really vulnerable time, and oftentimes immense suffering, mm-hmm. and to have this privilege to enter into that with them. And I see so much beauty, honestly, with the love between family members and the spouses, or, you know, parents and children. And although one could say, yes, this is very sad, there's also so much hope. And I think that my faith roots me in that. Some of the most meaningful patient encounters I've had have honestly been in the setting of patients who actually ask about things like physician-assisted suicide, because that is legal in my state of Colorado. And I work at a Catholic hospital, and so we are not involved in any way with this, but I still get it asked to me in my hospital. And so I work very hard to let the patients know how valued they are and that they have great meaning and that their life, despite this illness or what's going on, there is still opportunity for growth and for giving and for good life, and that if they would trust me, I'd like to walk with them and to help them to manage their symptoms or to manage the stress or to help process what's driving them to feel like this is the best option to end their life, and to try to help them know that life is very worth living, and that there are a lot of things we can do to support them.
So to listen to more of this great conversation, Dr. Natalie Rodden is going to be at Our Lady of Mount Carmel Sunday, October 14th at 10:40 a.m. And you're going to be talking about ethics on the edges of life. So thank you so much for being our guest. And tell me, what are you going to be talking about? Any specific topics that you're going to cover?
I think I'll be reviewing what palliative medicine is, all the ways that it can help patients, when palliative medicine should be involved. I'll be talking about hospice. I'll be talking about physician-assisted suicide and euthanasia, and hopefully being able to answer a lot of questions that people may have.
That sounds great. So again, this will be on Sunday, October 14th at Our Lady of Mount Carmel. Dr. Natalie Rodden will be talking about the ethics on the edges of life. So thank you so much for being my guest today. You've been really informative and a very joyful person.
Oh, thank you.
The joy in suffering, right?
Right. There's a lot of beauty that, yes, we can see.
Mm-hmm. Yes, there is. Well, thanks so much for being my guest, and God bless you and your work.
Thank you so much.
You have been listening to Faith in Action, the program that looks at how people put their faith into action in their everyday lives. Faith in Action is a presentation of Catholic Radio Indy. You can hear this episode of Faith in Action again or any past episode at CatholicRadioIndy.org. If you have a suggestion for a guest or topic for a future program, please call us at 317-870-8400 or email Jim at CatholicRadioIndy.org.